Yay, second half. Woo, yay. Yay, second half. Yay. What could be better in the second half? Hey, while you can take your seat, I want to introduce some of the people involved in this. First, thanks again to the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities who put this on, Virginia Festival of the Book and the Bridge. Also, my name is Joel Jones. My wife is Jen. So we have some other people here. Emily Bolachek is helping us work the door. Jude helped us setting up. And Sean McCord is doing some sound recording and doing the sound stuff here tonight. Is there anyone else I've forgotten here? Oh, and so let me do also, we have three teams of judges. We're also put your hands together for our official timekeeper, Tom. Yay, yeah. And who are judges, teams? What's your name, team name? Team Hawaii. Team Hawaii, woo! Cool, what are y'all? Team Cheap Dessert, yay! And I think, do we have a replacement here, or is this originals? Team Astro Plane. Yay, cool, awesome. Cool. So I also want to say, if you're interested in doing this, it's a great thing to do. Or you can go to bigbluedoor.org once again, and you can find the upcoming themes. Our April show, third Thursday of April, is going to be at Moto Saloon. Our May show is also at Moto Saloon. And the April show is Fools. And I think we may have one slot left. One slot? One or two. And then May, we have a couple slots, and that's Rivals. So if you have a story about Rivals or a story about Fools, then that's great. We want it to be a true story. It should be a personal story, something happened to you. And, it's about you know what it's like. It's whatever you want it to be about, okay?
Okay.
Would I have forgotten anything? No, cool. Without further ado, our next storyteller is an omelet chef at Integral Yoga and a man about town. Put your hands together. First time storyteller, Eric Cross. Yay!
I'm not really an omelet chef. Boy, Elvis, the Bible. Oh, my God. Where are we going to go from here? Okay, let's do this. Of the panoply of the pantheon of strange characters from my summer of love, being born, hippie beatnik, live in a van upbringing, there's millions. But for this story, you only need to know three people. The first one is a man named Bill Rowe. Bill Rowe was a beatnik, preschool teacher, guitar player, very funny. I loved him very dearly. I was always very, very happy when he came over, and I respected him greatly. The second person is a man named Patrick Ginnane, who was an archetypical Irishman. He was giant and strong and strapping and about a half inch from tossing a tabor at any given moment, and I loved him dearly. I mean, he represented the physical side of people, men in my life when I was little, that I idolized. And the third is my father, Eddie. And Eddie was, needless to say, my absolute hero. I loved him so much. He was so funny. And he would always take the time and, you know, made me feel special. And because people caught on to his vibe, all his friends would treat me special. He was like a softball player, and I would bat boy for his softball team, and they got me a little jersey and everything, and all the other players would call me Biggie, because I was Eric, and he was Eddie, and it was ironic, and whatever. So, I loved Eddie very much. I mean, obviously, he's my father. On my 9th birthday, my father had the flu, had come down with the flu. 3 months later, the flu had turned out to be cancer, and he was dead. Just like that. I know the story moves kind of fast, so hang with me. And believe me, there's a book in it, I swear. So, he died. And because he had 3 months in hospice, he had time to plan his funeral. And because he was a bit of a lunatic, he put all these constraints on the funeral. Like there was the no priests unless he knew me rule. And there was music he wanted played and some pedestrian stuff. But the way the funeral was set up, it was everybody sat in a circle. And he wanted everybody to just say whatever was on their minds, which was what was groovy and what was happening back then. So everybody went around the circle. And when my time came, much like when I was locked in his room on his deathbed and instructed to say whatever I wanted, my last words to him, when my came turn to talk, I had nothing. I had nothing to say. And I always kind of regretted that, but anyway. Well, about 3 years later, Patrick, remember? Big, strong Irish guy, yeah? He died Elvis style on the toilet, leaving his, well, his wife and young daughter were away camping. So they came back and they found him all stiff and enthroned and purple on the toilet and the whole bit. And because we had a really insular kind of like communal set of family friends, in a fit of pique, Patrick's wife based the whole funeral on the template of my father's. So 3 years later, I found myself sitting in the same funeral home, in the same circle of chairs, with the same people going on and on with their fucking, oh my God, the usual funeral monologues of, oh, I miss him so much, and it hurts so bad, and I was especially close to him for this reason, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It all seemed really egomaniacal to me. So, as we were going around, and everybody was speaking their minds and stuff now. See, one of the things that had bothered me when my father died, passed, whatever, everybody became kind of distant in that area around me. I just wanted to hear stories of him. I wanted to hear his friends tell his stories and like, oh, this one time, yeah, we were drunk. Oh, yeah, I mean, he stole the laughing lady at Playland. That would be an awesome story. I wanted to hear it. I didn't understand what it meant when I was little. But as I had grown older and I had tried to go back to like the softball games, it was just awkward for everybody and nobody wanted to talk to me about my father at all. It was uncomfortable for them, and I understand that now, but I didn't understand it when I was 9, and I didn't understand it when I was 10 or 11 or 12. And here I heard the same shit, you know, and I was sitting there looking at Patrick's daughter. And when the turn came around for me in the circle of chairs, I stood up and I said, you know, you guys, you guys say all this stuff, you know, and it's a great celebration of death or whatever it is, and we're all so hurt and we're all so sad, but if you really felt that way, the greatest thing you could do would be 5 years from now, you know, when his daughter asks you to tell a story about him, you can do it, you know? In fact, you could even do it without being asked. In fact, you could even do it, you know, without making it weird. I mean, you're adults, and you're in charge of taking care of his memory for her, because she doesn't even have a chance. And so I said that with passion, and then I called them all selfish, and then I sat down. Well, I always kind of figured that I wrecked that funeral, you know, because I was like, you know, that 13, 14-year-old angsty, like, I mean, I was just as egomaniacal as they were, but I felt it was a just cause. But on the list, you know, on the list of humiliations that I had suffered up to that point, this was so far down that I didn't even give it much thought, you know. I was like, I was, well... well into rebelling against the whole hippie thing. Anyway, so I do tend to run on. Anyway, so years later, you know, about 3 or 4 years later, a package came in the mail, you know, and I opened it up and it was a book. And it was Late Night Thoughts on Listening to Mahler's Ninth Symphony by Lewis Thomas.
And I opened it up, and inside was an inscription. And it said, this book really reminded me of you. You were very brave with your words at Patrick's funeral, and I always wanted to tell you that. You were my hero that day. Love, Bill. Remember Bill? Trust me, he's the only other character that doesn't die in this story, so this is all right. So, and I was completely amazed that, like, I had never even considered the fact I had spent my angsty teenage years looking for another hero, and it had never even occurred to me that I could be somebody else's hero, you know? Like, I didn't have to stand in the shadow of my father. I never felt darkness there because he was so bright, and I had been looking for another shadow to stand in. And all along, I never realized, you know, I could be that light. Thank you.
Quick epilogue. I never read the book, and I never listened to the symphony.
Wrecking the whole story. No, Eric Cross, everybody. Yay, cool. Let's read a couple of these. Okay. The favorite book, Big Sur. Earliest book sticks in your mind, The Phantom Tollbooth. No. Yeah, Phantom Tollbooth. The life inspired your book, what would the book be called? How I Came to Live in a Cave in Hawaii. Nonfiction. Right. Favorite book is His Dark Materials. I don't know that. What was the earliest book that sticks in your minds? Island of the Dolphin. What is your life inspired? We All Are the Stories We Tell. Not a bad title. And would it be fiction? It'd be fiction. Cool. Okay. Favorite book is The Secret Garden. Earliest book sticks in the mind? Secret Garden. And life inspired a book, it'd be called The Secret. No, it wouldn't be. What would the book be called? What the Hell Am I Doing? A how-to book. And that's copyrighted. Don't steal it, anybody. And it would be nonfiction. Speaking of theme, as you may have noticed in that story and all the other stories, our theme tonight is books. So if I didn't mention that before, that's what all these... We ask people to tell stories inspired by the theme of book. And the next person to tell us a story inspired by the theme of book is another first-timer here. This is a Jane of all trades. She works in a new company, that Pigment, which is going to be associated open soon. And it's part of Piedmont Paint and Finish. And they do consultation, I believe, check that out. Okay, put your hands together. Christy Baker.
Thank you. You guys having a good time?
Yeah.
Good. Nobody's fallen asleep yet. Congratulations. They had babies. Hundreds of babies. This is the phone call that I get from my dad a few days into my cross-country newlywed road trip, east to west coast. And yes, my pet cockroaches that I had left in his care had somehow multiplied. They were supposed to be all males, and now there were 150, 270. I don't know, but he counted. My husband and I were traveling to test this new marriage. We didn't know that's what we were doing, but that's what we did. And the drawing of these cockroaches is on the very first page of our sketchbook travel journal that we were sharing. And these little guys are on the edge of their little terrarium with their many legs and antenna waving, and bon voyage, they say out of the little speech bubbles above their heads. And this was just one of the many drawings that filled this book, tracing the lines of our journey from this. We started in New York, went down through the southern United States, across the dry lands and oil fields, out into the striking heights and drops of the West. And our destination was Northern California, to a little ranch just south of the Oregon border. And there, as I said, we were going to test this marriage. That we knew at that point. And we were going to try to untangle some of these lines that had formed in our lives with family, grief, and this nascent adulthood. See, Aaron, my husband, had graduated from college just a few months prior to us taking this trip. In fact, 2 weeks after he made the big walk across the stage, he made the big walk down the aisle to marry me. And he had just graduated from art school in Brooklyn, where we lived. And the year prior, I had also graduated from art school and was working at two nonprofits in Manhattan, basically treading water with my art degree until we could get off the island. So here we are, 22, on the road, going out to see the country with our sketchbook, because, you know, we're artists. We've got the degrees. And we, first stop is Philadelphia. That's where his family is. So we dropped off the last few of our boxes from our apartment, and his dad, ever the dedicated worker, made sure to tell us what a luxury this extended honeymoon was. His mother, ever the worrier, she is a mother of five children, made sure to point out that she was extremely worried that we would find ourselves stranded in Southern California eating out of a dumpster. I assured her she had nothing to worry about. And in fact, we didn't start dumpster diving until we moved to Charlottesville and stayed here. She doesn't know that, but... So, from there, we moved on and went down to Delaware, did some surfing, made it down to Charlottesville, where my family was, dropped off the aforementioned cockroaches, and now our last tie of responsibility, these stinking roaches, were behind us, and we were on our way. Why cockroaches, you might be asking? Nostalgia. When I was about 9... cockroaches were the first pet that I had. No, we weren't that poor. I mean, we were poor, but we weren't that poor. These were actually Madagascar hissing cockroaches that were given to me as a gift by a family friend who was doing research on them at Princeton and thought that this would be appropriate for a 9-year-old girl. I loved them. Loved them. Loved them so much that my sweet, sweet fiancé had gotten them for me for Christmas as a gift. Again, all males. Just because we only wanted 4. And so here I'm leaving these cockroaches. It's awesome. You guys actually might have seen these cockroaches before. You might think you haven't, but I think you have. They're not like your typical city roach. They don't carry disease. They're flightless. They don't usually stink or hang out in your empty beer cans. But what they do is hiss, which I'll tell you about in a second, and they're 3 inches long on average. They're awesome. They're so cool. They are the movie industry uses them all the time because they're so slick and creepy and just wacky. You may have seen them if you've ever seen Team America. When Kim Jong-il dies, there's one that crawls out of his dead mouth. Totally horrifying. Anyway, but like I said, they hiss. When they feel threatened, they actually expel air and hiss. So we're on our way. We've left Charlottesville. We're heading down south. We get through New Orleans. We're past Mississippi already and Alabama and all that. And we get to Texas. Texas. Now, there is one animal that I have never been so frightened of. Let me back up here. I spent 6 months in Australia bushwhacking through the rainforest face to face with tiger snakes and spiders literally as big as my hand, and I have never in my life been so scared of an animal until I met the Texas Gulf mosquito. So Aaron and I roll up. We've got our tent in the back. It's nighttime. Like, there's nothing out. We are on the Gulf at this nature preserve across the street from the oil refinery. And we get out of the car, we're gonna set up the tent, the water's right there, oh, how nice. Within 10 seconds, I am back in the car. I've got tears and blood, no joke, streaming down my face, down my arms, down my legs. There are mosquitoes fucking everywhere. And Aaron's sitting there. He's got like blood spatter all over his shirt. And he's like, all right, babe, I'm going to go set up the tent, my hero. He goes out and I'm just thrashing around in the car, like grabbing mosquitoes out of the air by the handful, smashing them, just crying. This is hell on earth right here. Why would anyone ever want to be in Texas? He's like, all right, babe, I got this tent. Let's go. We rush into the tent. We get in there. We spend the next 20 minutes just killing mosquitoes. Just, and then in the dark, this was kind of romantic. We're holding each other. You know, we're newlyweds. We're holding each other. And we just watch as the little proboscis of the mosquitoes by the thousands are poking through the netting of the tents. We didn't sleep much that night. But the next morning, I scraped off some of the dead bodies into our little scrapbook, and we got the hell out of Texas. So we finally make it to Northern California. We get to the ranch. We had stopped and visited friends and family along the way. Got lots of other stories related to that. But we get to Northern California. We're in the ranch. And finally, I hit a point where I can settle into myself and into this new communion. And here, I can finally stop running. You see, I'm sorry to be a downer, but my mom had died unexpectedly just a few months before we had gotten married. She was healthy, she was active, everything was fine. And then I got the call late one night in February. It was February 2003. And all of a sudden, I was plunged into this sharp, vivid reality of change. And that night, I literally ran. I ran in the dark through the New York streets, the raw, aching streets that were still impacted from the events only a year and a half prior. And I ran without fear, without effort, without breath. And I hadn't stopped running until finally we had come to this place, this front yard trailer on this ranch nestled in the dry grass mountain lion fur that are the hills of Northern California. And here I wept. And I cried, and I was free. And my dear, dear sweet husband sat close by drawing our memories, our adventures, and smiling at those to come. Thanks.
Christy Baker, everybody. A couple more days. What is the earliest book that sticks in your mind? Mandy. If your life inspired a book, what would the book be called? Before I moved below the Mason-Dixon line. Nonfiction. Favorite book, the Bible. Earliest book, The Pokey Little Puppy. What your life inspired a book, what would the book be called? Stranger Than Fiction. And it would be nonfiction. Moby Dick. Frog and Toad. And the life would be called Non Sequitur. And it would be fiction or nonfiction. It would be eggplant. There's a jokester here. Yeah. Cool. We have two more storytellers. Next to last one. This person, she is a tremendous artist. She is currently working in an auction house specializing in antiques and period furniture. And she has a pet rabbit named Sugar, I think. Put your hands together for Rose Zorba.
Hi. So this is a story that happened in around 1977. I was 7 years old. I grew up with my mother. She raised us and my little brother. My mom had criminal projects that we would all gang up together and do. And this one particular thing was checking books out of the library. So my mother also had polio, so when she would walk, she would have to lean on me to be able to walk fast. So what we would do is we would go to the library, my little brother and I, and meet my mom. And we would check out books, whatever books we wanted. And we'd take them home, and she made us book bags to carry the books. And we would walk down the railroad tracks to our house, And about, like, I guess a year went by, but we just kept getting books, never returning them. And because she had polio, she wasn't about to. She couldn't walk that far. So my little brother and I started to, like, realize that these books were ours. And so we took pictures out of them and hung them up on the wall. We made furniture. There's a podium here that this is made of. So we got really creative with it. There were books everywhere. And we lived in a really teeny apartment. So it's just like they were everywhere. And then we found like the Time Life series. There was like covered in leather. And so we got that whole section. And like that looked really pretty in the house. And we didn't have much. We were on welfare. So she was raising us, you know, just on the funds from the state. So in a way, when we had these books, we felt richer somehow. And you know, we read. She was brilliant. But after about a year, I was outside and it was summer, playing with my Barbies, my horses. And the police showed up, and they were with the Carroll County Public Library, the librarians, and they had their duffels, and they said, "Well, we have a search warrant. We're coming to get the books." And so, I hadn't realized that this is like, you know, being a kid, you don't really think like, "Oh, this is a crime or something," but. and how she did it was she got a card first. And then after we didn't return the books from her card, she got me a card, and all the books we got was on my card. And then my brother, and then my sister, who was estranged at the time. So the police came, and they confiscated all the books. And I remember my brother and I were writing in the books, like, property of, like, Chaplin, Sorba, and, you know, getting really like, yeah, we got it. And so they took the books back, and they arrested my mom. And the next day at school, we heard that it was in the paper. My brother and I heard that it was in the paper that a local woman had stolen over 3,000 books from the library. And it was like the headlines, like right across the thing. So we got into some fights with kids after school that day, like, "Oh, your mom, blah, 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 blah." And, you know, and so we went home, we found mom, and she was really upset. And so she asked us to go out to the newspaper boxes and get all the newspapers, and she's going to destroy them. So we did it. My brother, he's only a couple years younger than me, and he really thin and pale. We were just pale and sick all the time from eating, like, sugar toast and ramen noodles. Like, there were no rules in my house. And so we went out. We got all the newspapers. It was so many newspapers. I brought them back home, and I remember my mom going into the bathroom and trying. She started ripping them and trying to flush them down the toilet, the article. And as an adult, like, I think, oh, this doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that? Like, of course the toilet is going to overflow. And it did. And she started crying. And then so we just started tearing up the newspapers and putting them into black trash bags, which we hid underneath of the stairs. So we really never talked about it. It wasn't like, oh, you know, it just kind of got swept under the rug. And we went on with our next adventure, which was stealing potted plants from people's houses. She's always coming up with something. And years later, I left her when I was 12. I decided that I wanted to go live with a preppy family and live in normal life. And I remember going, I went back to Maryland, to Westminster, and I really wanted a library card because I loved reading. Like, that opportunity, like, us taking all those books, like, made a huge indent on me. I drew from the books. I drew on the books. I read the books. Like, the books were mine. And so I really wanted to get a library card at the library. But I was so embarrassed. I was like, oh my God, they're going to know that I'm Claire Sorba's daughter and that we stole all his books. And they didn't know, because I walked up to the thing and I thought, oh, the woman's going to be like, oh, you're Miss, I knew who you are. And I was like, okay, well, I want to apply for a library card. And the librarian was like, okay, well, have you had a library card before? And I was like, yeah, maybe, I think, maybe years ago. And she like did it in a, and this is like before like hi-fi computers. She's like, oh, I see you have a fine. And my heart just dropped, because I had this book on Marilyn Monroe that I really wanted to get out. And oh God. And it was just so embarrassing. And I was like, okay, well, how much is it? And she's like, 27 cents. I was so relieved. And just so, oh yeah. So that's my story about our big book theory. Yeah, the guys. Thank you.
Rose Zorba, everyone. We're going to have one more storyteller in a minute, but first I want to tell you, if this looks like fun to you, again, you know, go on and sign up to do this. We also, if you're interested in doing it, but not quite sure how to approach it, we have some advice online, but also... tighten this. Also, we teach a class in it, a Telling True Stories class, and part of that is over the course of a six-week thing, you build up about eight stories, and we use it to help you develop a bunch of story material. And we've run it a couple times, and next one is starting in April. You can find out about that, again, at bigbluedoor.org. Also, we teach courses, live improv classes at Live Arts, and we do a little bit of storytelling stuff in that as well, and some people here have taken those as well, and so you can go. Actually, I think their website is down, isn't it? Yeah. So you can send them a carrier pigeon or something. I don't know what you do in the modern world without. But it should be up. Or you can look at, again, the theme of the evening. Not books, but me saying bigbluedoor.org. You can look on there and get the information about the improv classes. Anything else? I want to also say, speaking of which, this podium is made by one of our former storytellers as well, Terry Long, who's here tonight, and did all these great book things, which I think are really cool. So check this out, and this is here to the end of the month. So that's really cool. I'm going to introduce, we did all us, yes. So I don't have anything else but the next storyteller, do I? Yeah, okay, we have one more storyteller, and then while Jen is collecting the votes from our judging panels, and then we will do, I'm going to do a little audience game with you, and we may give out some stickers. Stagers. Last person is this used to be, he learned to tell stories because he used to be in a folk band with a guitarist who always broke his strings. He had a lot of time killing. Come check out tomorrow night at the Emily Dickinson after party, which is here at what time? 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock here, Emily Dickinson after party. And I think also Mindy is going to be part of that too, I think. Emily Dickinson will be here. So you will want to check this out, definitely. Put your hands together for Browning Porter.
Thank you. Well, my parents divorced when I was a kid, and in the summertime when we would go to stay with my mother, she had to work in the county office building, which was right next to the ratty little walk-up apartment that she lived in. And my sister and I didn't have anything to do except wander the streets of Leesburg, which we did every day. And we would go to the little knick-knack stores and browse until they kind of gave us a fishy look. And we go to the pubs and play Space Invaders with quarters the old-fashioned way that you played video games in those days until we ran out of quarters. And we go to the bookstores. And there were a couple of nice little bookstores, and I loved to just hang out in them. But I found this one really strange bookstore that was in a basement, and it was very dark, and it was kind of like a bookstore from a fantasy novel or something. It was dim down there, and there were just stacks and stacks of books that were overflowing everywhere. And in the math and science section, I found a book that was the oldest book I'd ever seen, and it was actually probably the oldest man-made thing that I still have ever really seen outside of a museum. And it was called Parks, Farmers, Merchants, and Mechanics, Practical Arithmetic. And the title went on for, that's like the first tenth of the title, and it goes on, with the rules of arithmetic provided for men of business, and it was by Uriah Park, who was a author of lectures on the philosophy of arithmetic, and it was, you know, and it was old, it was published in, it said right on the cover, 1848, and I was very excited by this, and so I, There was a teenager behind the counter in this little bookstore, and I went up and I said, "So, how much is this book?" And he took it from me with a little bit of interest of his own. He kind of flipped it around and he said, "Where'd you find this?" And I said, "It was right over there. You know, it's just right on the shelf right there." And he said, $5. So I said, okay, so, but I didn't have $5. I'd put it in the Space Invaders machine. So I had to run back to my mother's office building, beggar for the cash, run all the way back to the bookstore, and I bought the book, and I took it home, and I was just mesmerized. And so I began to study it, and I started to look things up, like, how old was this book, really? You know, James Polk was the president. Abraham Lincoln was a junior congressman at the time. This book was published before the invention of the sewing machine. It was before the invention of dynamite. It was before the revolver. Moby Dick hadn't been published yet. Thoreau's Walden hadn't been published yet. Origin of Species hadn't been published yet. Mark Twain, he was 13. He was 2 years older than me. This could have been his math book. And the book was brown. It was really, really brown through and through. Every page, the ink in it was brown. It had been gnawed all around the corners by rodents. It was like slightly oblong, you know, kind of roundish, round and brown. And it was filled with the hardest, weirdest arithmetic problems that you could ever imagine. You know, it'd be things like, how many horns, tails, ears, eyes, and hooves have 100 cows, 18 of which are muleys? 6 men go into partnership to buy a grindstone, and they each intend to grind off their successive shares. And if the grindstone is 30 inches in diameter, how much is each of their shares, making no allowance for the eye? A speech of 2.5 hours in Congress shall cost the American public $260. How much money will it cost the public for all of Congress to speak for far too long? What is the comparative bulk of a quart of whiskey and a quart of gooseberries? Now that's a trick question, right? That's the same. So I just love this book, and it had all this stuff. It was a practical book. It was all about, you know, measuring liquor and lumber and grain and like what was an Ohio ton compared to a regular ton, or how do you convert a Virginia shilling to a Pennsylvania pound, and had a whole lot about this new fangled federal currency, you know, and how all that was going to work. It was like, there are 10 bills in a cent, there are 10 cents in a dime, there are 10 dimes in a dollar, there are $10 in an eagle. I kind of wished I could get my hands on an eagle, you know? What is a mill? What does that look like? And but the coolest thing about it for me was that in the front cover, this book belonged to somebody. I mean, it had been well used. It was scribbled all the way through with calculations in lead pencil that were mostly somebody multiplying things wildly by pi. You know, da 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 by times 3.14, but in the front cover it was she had written her name. Her name was Lizzie Grubbs, and she had written it. She had signed her name in there in the middle of the Civil War, and she had written her name and then a poem, and the poem was, "Forget my friends and name it not. I love them with regret. there is one whose name that I shall ne'er e'er forget. Ask not his name. I only breathe a simple word in prayer, but if you look inside my heart, you'll find it written there. And then she had written a lot of names underneath that, and it was the kind of thing that I remember girls from, you know, in my era doing, where she had written people's names, but she kept changing their last names, like Mrs. Anna T. Backhouse, Mrs. Anna T. Grubbs, Miss Alley Backhouse. And then after about a half a dozen of these at the bottom, she said, my beloved cousin, J.T. Backhouse. And it was amazing to me to have found this connection with this person from so long ago. And somebody asked me recently, well, what, you know, what is that book worth now? What is it, if you were going to try to sell it, how much money would it be worth? And I looked it up, and on eBay, it was about $70. If a boy of the age of 11 should find an antique textbook and keep it for 30, 40 years, and then have occasion to sell it at auction through an electronic device, he purchased it for $5, and he could sell it for $70, what should be the amount of his profit? In eagles. It's a trick question. It's not for sale.
Thank you.
Cool. You're going to collect ballots while I go and do this? Cool. So if the judges can ignore what I'm saying, most of you are doing that anyway, haha, then we're going to do a little game while we're waiting for them to fill out their ballots. So everybody here, why don't we do this? Everyone stand up, except for the judges. Judges can stay sitting. Unless you're done with your ballots, then you can. Okay, everyone stand up. Now, if you've never, ever in your life thought about or fantasized about writing a book, sit down. Never thought about it. Never fantasized about it, never thought. Okay. So if you have fantasized about it or thought about it enough to actually get an idea of what that book might be, if you have not thought about it enough to even come up with any vague idea of what the book would be, then sit down. So it was only a fantasy to write something. You had no idea what it would be. Okay. So everyone's standing at some kind of vague idea, right? Okay. For the people standing there, if you sit down, if you've never written a sentence that had to do with this in this fantasy book or actual book, maybe, in some cases. So never. So everyone here has actually written something, right? Okay. So everyone sit down if you never finished a paragraph. It's that the first paragraph that kills you, doesn't it? Knock those people out. sit down if you've never finished a chapter. Cool. Okay, so how many people we have? 1, 2, 3, 4. Now sit down if you've, okay, this will probably be a huge jump. How many people here, put your hands up if you finished a draft. If you finished a draft. Okay, so stay up. Everyone stay up. Let's do this. How about sit down if you have if you don't have an idea of what the book would be if you finished it. So you basically, even though you haven't finished a draft necessarily, you kind of know what it would be if you did finish it. It would be memoir, it would be this, it would be that, right?
Stand or sit.
Sit if you don't. If you don't. Okay. So everyone here has some kind of idea what your book would be, right? All right. So everyone here could theoretically finish this book, right? All right? Okay, so what we're going to do, this is going to be unusual. We usually have a little game that we play at the end, and we only give out one sticker. But I'm going to give it a lot of stickers. So I want all of you people to accept the sticker. This is entirely by your choice. You make an agreement that you're going to try to finish this book between this year and next year. Okay? You don't have to take this, but it's just an honor system. An honor system. Who wants a sticker? All right. manuscript. Oh, did you have one as well? Anyone here have a manuscript, either a finished book that's that is available for purchase, or a manuscript you're trying to shop? You do? He does? Cool. So you're trying to shop. That's the one you're shopping now. Anyone here? So check out Chris. You got one? It's already published. Is it available? Online. What's it called?
We have Lesson of the Fire and we have.
Those are two different books or one title?
Two different books, same world, science fiction.
Science fiction. We have Less Than Fire. Lesson of Fire, Lesson of Fire, and Kingmaker. Okay, so we'll give me all a sticker. Anyone else? Something else available anywhere? Cool. So all you guys, give us a hand for the great book you're going to write this year. Or maybe it'll suck, but that's all right. It'll be done. Yay. Also, we will next be the third Thursday in April at Moto Saloon. And I'm also going to, is Jen around? Have we got, Connie, you ready?
Yeah.
Cool. So, yeah, so also we have tiebreakers that are based on time, what else? What? Oh, if someone's left, then you're disqualified. I mean, there's all kinds of tiebreakers because a lot of times think at least two people or three people tie. This is very close, but I'll just announce it. The winner is Browning Porter. Thank you all. Give yourself a hand again for all our fantastic storytellers. Great job. What? Oh. Thank you to Virginia Foundation for the Virginia Festival of the Book and the Virginia Festival, the Foundation of the Humanities and the Bridge. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, gosh. She was trying to, I was like, what do you want me to thank? Didn't I thank those people? Also, if you fill out your evaluations, the Virginia Foundation of the Humanities would like to see them. Just leave them on your chair. Or if you fling them out into the street, someone will pick them. No, they won't. Actually, just leave them here. Thanks so much, everybody.